Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I'm Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, I'm joined by Michael Diamond. Michael is the founder of Arcturious, a new Salesforce partner based in Sydney. Through the episode, we talk more about Michael's career before Salesforce and what led him into the Salesforce ecosystem, having come from a sales and account management background. We then look at that sales and account management background to see if that's something that he felt really benefited him when he moved into consulting. And we then look at his career in the Salesforce ecosystem ever since, moving from sales into a hands-on Salesforce configuration role, then progressing through to solution architect, practice manager, and ultimately a director with a large consulting practice before setting up his own company recently. We look at why he pursued an MBA recently and what he hopes that will help with future endeavors. We look at starting a business through COVID and the challenges that he's faced, and then also what he's done to ensure the business is future fit and what they have set up as a business in their early days that they look to carry through post-COVID and into the new norm. We look at the broader Salesforce ecosystem, what's changed over the years and what he sees changing in the coming months and years, and how other consulting businesses, as well as his own, will have to adapt. So yeah, really, really interesting episode. Michael has a lot of interesting views on the ecosystem and a lot of knowledge to share. So I hope you enjoy the episode. And if you do, please do subscribe for future episodes that are coming through. Cool. So Michael, thank you so much. Here we are about to share your new exciting story and hear more about you, which I'm really keen to hear and dig a little bit deeper around.
Fantastic. Thanks, Ben. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So I always like to start with life before Salesforce and what was interesting you before the world of the Salesforce ecosystem?
Yeah, I mean, going back 10 or so years, maybe a little bit longer, I was working in hospitality as a bartender, cocktail bartender, running a bunch of restaurants and bars. And then I got into sales, sold everything from franking machines to employee benefits, IoT solutions, little modems, and then got involved in the Salesforce ecosystem and jumped in at SMS and started there in the consulting practice and very quickly took on a capability lead role there and then ended up at PwC as a director. So, you know, go forward another 2 and a bit years and started Arcturious. So my tale is pretty much from bartender to founder in about 10 years.
Yeah, nice. What cocktails were you famous for when you were behind the bar?
The one that pops to mind right now is a Thai martini, bit of lemongrass and vodka and gom syrup and little chili rim. Beautiful.
Yeah, nice, nice. So yeah. I just want to dig a little bit deeper about your sales past, because you've kind of gone from being a salesperson and account manager into being more kind of on the platform. So how did that happen? And when you were a salesperson, well, you were using Salesforce, right?
Yeah. So my second sales job was at a company called ABC Connection, and we had a RFP platform for the business travel sector. And coming into that role, they didn't really have a sales platform. So they basically tasked me to go and find one for them. And needless to say, I found Salesforce. Loved it from the moment I kind of opened it up and got a trial going, and then started just setting it up as I went. And then in every role post that, Salesforce or CRM was part of, it was the extra 20%. Mm-hmm. And I often say to people, you know, the extra 20% you do and you don't get paid for could one day be your career. And that's very much something that I've certainly seen and lived myself. So, you know, at ABC Connection, like I say, I implemented Salesforce there. When I moved into the IO computer share, I was part of a team that built a custom CRM. And then I sat on a global working group to help them select a CRM for the global computer share group, and then moved into Wireless Logic and again helped them optimize their Salesforce and got it integrated with their proprietary set of tools. And then when I moved to Australia, that was kind of the big fork in the road for me, because I went a bit rogue. The company I worked for at the time had just invested in a not so good CRM built on their payroll system, basically, which was horrific. I had made a suggestion to move to Salesforce, and at the time they were like, nah, we've just put this big investment in, we can't justify it. So I set up a trial Salesforce account, got GeoPoint in, started doing some really cool things with mapping and within 2 weeks, I'd done more than they'd done in 6 months. So built a business case off that. The directors were blown away and said, yep, do it. At which stage I went to market to find a partner to help me on that journey. Got the first quote through, didn't get signed off on the quote. So I said, you know, I'm just going to do it myself. Built out this awesome Salesforce platform for both, you know, sales, service, warehouse management, and integrated into the backend tools using things like Informatica Cloud. So very much click and drag type stuff. I didn't have to write a line of code, but we really fundamentally changed the way we were doing things. And that was kind of my real start into then going, well, actually, I do the Salesforce stuff pretty well.
Yeah.
Maybe I should make this my career. So made a few phone calls into Salesforce and attended all the workshops and events. I made little micro CV cards with my picture and key skills on it. And I went to every Salesforce event I could go to. Got two or three offers, including one from Salesforce and one from SMS and a couple other consulting firms. Jumped on board at SMS and the rest is history. So
sure.
Yeah, an interesting journey.
So, because not all salespeople love using Salesforce, and I guess that's the same for any CRM, right? But you loved it and you wanted to build a career on the platform. Was that because you had a kind of technical, like you were just intrigued by the platform and wanted to do stuff on it? Or like, why do some salespeople just not enjoy using Salesforce?
I think the reason that a lot of salespeople don't enjoy platforms like Salesforce and, like you say, you know, any CRM probably comes down to two things. One, salespeople hate being micromanaged and hate being watched. And two, they hate admin. So anything that slows down the sales process, they see as the enemy, right? For me, in my journey, Salesforce was always an enabler opposed to a management information system. I could, before I walked into a client, I knew about their service issues, right? I could walk in and have a conversation that was a lot more meaningful, certainly as an account manager, but also in sales roles, where I could walk into a client and say, okay, you know, I know you've had an issue. The issue is currently being dealt with, but how about we talk about this new exciting project? The alternative is, hey, let's go talk about this new exciting project. And the client goes, whoa, 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 whoa. We have a service issue you guys haven't resolved. You're shit.
Yeah.
So being able to avoid those conversations is part of the reason I love the tool.
Sure.
And then, you know, starting to pull in other information from other parts of the business really helped certainly me to have more informed conversations with clients. And then I, you know, after doing Salesforce for a little while, identifying that, you know, it's not just a sales operations tool. It can do so much more. You know, the fact that I could have an impact on the way that businesses do business and ultimately how people work within those businesses, because there's always a very human element. And that's always been very much part of Salesforce's story, right? It's all customer, employee, partner-centric information and building out this 360-degree view. And then moving into apps and operations side is where the real interest was for me.
Sure. And how easy was it at that point? Because you have Trailhead now, right? But back then you wouldn't have had Trailhead. So how easy was it to become hands-on and learn and actually build these platforms that you were showcasing to the business?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was just about the fact that you could always set up a trial or a demo or dev accounts in Salesforce, which was nice. And that was one of the big benefits of the tool, right? Is you could get in, you could start just playing. But where it really started adding value, and I think where some of the biggest learnings are, is when you start to enable little business problems. So it could be, you know, how do I make a better pipeline report? Or it could be, how do I manage a carpool and manage trucks in the field and all that kind of stuff, right? So getting your hands on some real business cases, I think certainly back then was the real driver for enabling yourself on Salesforce. So it's not just about, and I'd probably say this today as well, right? Even with Trailhead, you can be technically proficient and you're technically excellent, but if you don't understand how to transform business need into technology platform or enabled by technology, you know, I think that's where a lot of people struggle.
Yeah, sure. So you've spent a long period of time now in consulting. How valuable and why so valuable were your sales skills, your life before Salesforce, when moving into a consulting gig? You were still in a hands-on role in consulting. You weren't just selling, right?
Correct. So in particular, when I jumped into SMS, I actually joined as a senior consultant and project manager. So I was in the tool on client site, building some really fun stuff, as well as managing projects. So where the sales skills really come in is probably a couple places, right? Like, I personally believe that everybody should invest in sales skills. It's about understanding needs and selling an idea. And when you move into the project space and consulting space, every idea that you come up with, whether it's, you know, convincing a client to sign a change order or convincing a stakeholder that by sitting in a facilitation workshop, we're going to deliver something that's really awesome for them and bring them on that journey. And that's really, when you boil down to it, that's what sales skills are, right? It's about understanding those needs and communicating effectively. So yeah, ultimately very, very important in consulting.
Sure. And talking about like everyone should invest in sales training or some sort of exposure to sales. And you are someone that invests in themselves because you've recently gone through the whole MBA process. Why did you pursue that? And how do you see that playing a role in future endeavors for you?
Yeah, so I've always been a little bit obsessed actually with improving myself by that extra 10%. And I used to do that. And in fact, I still do that by listening to a lot of audiobooks and investing in books and novels and just trying to build in content and understand content. The MBA was a bit of a turning point for me because, you know, I've never done a degree before. I started one in the UK and then I moved to Australia and life gets in the way.
Yeah.
So my motivations for doing the MBA originally were about building out a network and also getting that little piece of paper on the wall. What it turned out to be was, you know, really a very hands-on and experiential process. So, you know, really, it's not just about business and business management and reading a profit and loss statement. It's about who you are, what are your core values, challenging those core values, understanding your power dynamic. How do you communicate with people? How do you motivate them to do what they need to do to achieve an outcome? So there's a lot of the softer skills. There's also some great stuff, certainly at Sydney Uni, around using processes like Lean Design and the Double Diamond process to understand customer needs and customer motivations, test and validate solutions, and then take solutions to market and go through the commercialization process. So, you know, fundamentally, all very, very good skills and skills that can be applied to any business role and any walk of life. So, you know, being reminded about what the Double Diamond process is and how it's used in product design and business strategy is essentially just applying a tool set that I use to identify, you know, customer requirements for a Salesforce solution. But being able to apply it to a different context is very much eye-opening.
Sure. So when you set out on the MBA path, was that with a view to having a business of your own when you came out the other end?
No, although having a business of my own has always been something in the back of my mind. It's always been something I've wanted to do. When I started the MBA, it was literally about, you know, building out my network and probably more for the roles that I was doing at the time. So when you do an MBA, you're in a room with a lot of very, very smart people at very, very important junctures in their careers. So being able to, you know, share ideas with those people and talk to them and build up knowledge was really my key motivator and one of the big benefits. Coming out the other end, you know, the last 6 months of my MBA were very much focused on building businesses. So I went to, you know, India for 2 weeks and we had to look at one of the sustainability goals. And essentially we got dropped in India, in Bangalore, and they went, go find a problem. So you're in a country where English isn't their first language. You're jumping in tuk-tuks and you're running around Bangalore to try and interview people who, again, you're not on the same level of communication with them. It's a very different space. They've got very different problems. And identifying something that's really going to change some people's lives and then building out a social enterprise around it. So that was, you know, really, really eye-opening, great experience and a great application of those tool sets. And then straight after that, I did innovation in corporate venturing, which was essentially going through a very similar process. Identify a problem, identify a solution, test it, make sure you're interviewing real users, very customer-centric, and then building out business models. And if you could, in that 5 or 6 week period, actually trying to make some money, which a number of the people in our cohorts actually did get some money changing hands, which was fantastic. And then the very last capstone unit is, you know, we had the pleasure of working with City of Sydney to look at problems or certainly try and revitalize the high street. So again, kind of going out in the market, talking to people on Oxford Street during Mardi Gras, which was very interesting, and identifying why they wanted to be on that street, what the problems were, what issues the shopkeepers were having and what issues the Chamber of Commerce were having. And again, trying to build out really interesting solutions that City of Sydney actually had some money to go and invest in later. So quite an interesting part of the MBA, and obviously the final step that leverages the whole range of skills you're developing. So, you know, going back to back through those three, it's probably no surprise that I got the bug and decided to go out on my own.
Yeah, absolutely. And then really unfortunate in some ways, but interesting nonetheless, COVID, right? So you're just about to launch a business and you're mentally gathering the pace and getting everything in place. And then here comes COVID. So tell me about that, like how that felt and how you approached it.
Yeah, so before I got the bug for actually building out the business, I did decide to take a few months off. So I was supposed to go to Europe and go to weddings and go drink some wine in France and all that fun stuff. And then, like you say, COVID hit, so I was grounded. And while I was kind of sitting at home and going for runs and walking down to the beach every other day, I started thinking about what's happening in the market and where I wanted to be. COVID, I think, is actually quite an interesting turning point for many reasons. And I've always had the belief that there's opportunity in chaos. And the fact that COVID has kind of pulled up and trenched everything up and really forced a lot of companies to do things that they'd never really done, or at least never really done wholeheartedly, was an opportunity that I thought now's the best time to really go for it. So, you know, companies are investing in digitization like they haven't before, or they were kind of doing half-heartedly. The fact that people are, you know, been forced to work from home, and, you know, there's a big disruption across that workplace balance and what the workplace of the future is looking like. So I'm for example, talking to a partner and coaching company that does some great work with coaching execs. They have an awesome platform for the middle, but what they're wanting to build out is a really interesting solution for workplace design. So what the physical space now needs to look like, and then what digital tools need to be put in to enable employees to work more effectively and still feel connected.
Sure.
So there's some really interesting opportunities out in the market. And yeah, I think it's only going to become more and more kind of obvious as we go through. It's an exciting time.
So what have you had to do to position your business as future fit and maybe that you might not have done pre-COVID if you were building a business?
Yeah, so when I'm talking about Octurious, I often say that we're a child of COVID in a number of ways, right? One, our business is virtual first or digital first. People often get the two kind of mixed up, but virtual first in the way that, you know, whether I'm on client sites or working remotely, I'm leveraging the same tool sets. And that's something that I certainly hadn't done in earnest before. You know, you're going to a client site and we're pulling out post-it notes and drawing on whiteboards and sticking things around and really engaging in a very local way. And I'd probably say one of the biggest and best changes is the fact that, you know, now I walk in, I don't have one post-it note on me. And in fact, I hardly ever have a pen. And I'm bringing up Miro and, you know, we're diving straight into some really cool, interesting workshops. We're able to do things on virtual tools that we're not able to do through physical tools. And if the government turns around and says we're locked down, well, it doesn't matter because I'm still leveraging the same set of tools. So, you know, with the client that we've just worked with, you know, we had a couple instances where that was really useful. The first was the fact that we had a dispersed team. So we had people in Melbourne and the Central Coast and New Zealand and WA and Sydney kind of all in these sessions. Some of those people were in a physical room with me. Some of them weren't, but we're all engaged to the same set of tools. And then we had that major car crash on the Harbour Bridge and I couldn't get across town. So I turned around, came home and I ran exactly the same workshop from my study. So that I think is fundamentally powerful and means that we are future fit and we are COVID safe. And, you know, it doesn't matter what gets thrown at us, we can still operate and work in that way. The other thing is probably, you know, again, when it comes to physical space, sometimes it is nice to come into a central location. So leveraging, you know, co-working spaces and virtual offices is something that I've also found very useful that I probably wouldn't have necessarily done without COVID. But, you know, we've now taken up a virtual office in Circular Quay, beautiful space. And I can go in there once or twice a week and bring my team in once or twice a week. And we can work together if we need to. And if we don't need to, well, you know, we just carry on working from home. So it's great to have that extra bit of flexibility.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if COVID disappeared tomorrow, I think that there's many, many people in the market that would want to continue doing a lot of what's happened because of COVID. So yeah. In a way, it has been a digital enabler, like you mentioned.
What would you say is the biggest thing that you would want to see continue? Is it flexibility and having that flexible mindset that, you know, people don't have to be physically in front of you to achieve an outcome?
Yeah, I think that certainly is one of the biggest for me. Flexibility of how you're working, where you're working, when you're working, I think are very important and, you know, often very difficult to deal with in the consulting landscape, right? Because we need to be visible to our customers quite often. And we need to feel like we have open channels. So one of the other things I've done, for example, is, you know, even not being in the same space, a lot of my team in this last project were like, well, when we're not sitting next to you, it's really difficult to get hold of you. So I was like, okay, fine, let's do a trial. Tomorrow I'm gonna have my camera on Hangouts all day. It'll be like I'm in the same space as you. You don't feel pressure, don't put your camera on, you know, but stay on the call, keep yourself muted. And if you have a question, just unmute yourself and ask me. It's the same as sitting next to me in the office, right?
Did it freak you out at first when all of a sudden, what was that voice?
No, I unfortunately was expecting it. So I was ready for the Michael. And no, it actually worked really, really well. That's something that I'd probably do more often going forward as well. So yeah, I think, you know, in terms of things that we need to continue investing in digitization, continue being very open-minded about how and when people work, and continue being creative. So creativity around space is something that I'm really excited to see. When I walk into my next office, what do I want it to look like? I want it to be very open plan. I want to have really cool collaboration spaces. And, you know, I probably don't want to see a desk. I want to go to those spaces for something intentional.
Sure.
And I want to see more people be intentional about when and how they meet and interact with people. Like, you know, we need to be open to being just, you know, a phone call away in a lot of ways and always connected. And, you know, it's a bit of a work-life integration instead of a work-life balance conversation. How do we pull those things together?
Yeah, absolutely. So you obviously thought this through for a long period of time because it wasn't necessarily something that you did the MBA to do. And it obviously came about that you were going to start a consulting business in the Salesforce world. So you must have had time to think about what other consulting companies are potentially not doing so well or where the gap in the market is. So what do you make of the broader kind of consulting landscape and how is that changing now in comparison to kind of 5 or so years ago?
Yeah, I think to answer that, we also need to kind of look at the broader economic and global landscape as well. And I think, you know, fundamentally, even before COVID, there was already starting to be a really interesting shift around, you know, states and nations and companies and people becoming very protectionist in nature. So we had this, you know, over the years, this big globalization thing happening, and now there's a bit of a contraction. I don't think in any way it's going to contract all the way. COVID has also forced us to do things that we've never done before, right? We're closing borders. We're trapped on our little continent, right? We're stuck here for the moment.
Sure.
And there's this element of hyper-localization that I've seen spoken about as well. So when you apply that to the consulting landscape, I think there's a few things going on. One, in the short term, there'll probably be less offshore, more nearshore capability. There's going to be an interesting shift in how and when we do business, I think, to a certain degree. And when we look at the Salesforce ecosystem, it's very much about becoming more and more specialized and industry aligned. With the big changes that are happening at the moment, there's a lot of conflicting advice and conflicting motivations. You look at the hospitality industry, which has obviously taken a massive hit during COVID, and we've had this big push to work from home, and we've again closed our borders, so there's no tourists coming in. But the messaging we're getting now is, please come back to the city, come back to the CBD, come spend some money, come into the economy. So I think, you know, going forward 6 to 12 months, all the corporate hospitality and stuff that was starting to fade away over the last 10 years, I think we'll start coming back. I think we'll be pressured to start interacting a little bit more in the cities, although we'll continue to maintain some of that flexibility. And from a consulting standpoint, we need to be hyper-focused around specific problems and specific industries, but also understand that every client is unique. Every client is unique, but they also quite often have very similar problems. So being able to shift or at least deal with that tension between solutionizing and creating accelerators for everything, and we think everybody needs the same thing, but also having the other side of that coin, which is hyper personalization, right? So consumers aren't in shops anymore. but they still need to be engaged, and they still need to be engaged as, you know, me, Michael Diamond. What do I like? What do I not like? And what are the things that I don't even know about myself in a lot of ways? And we need technology to enable a lot of that change.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be an interesting landscape over the coming years. And you mentioned about verticals and industry specializations. Do you feel that vertical skill sets, not just Salesforce, like not just product specializations, but like, do you think in a couple of years' time, someone with airline industry domain experience is going to be more valuable to a Salesforce consulting partner than someone with Salesforce skills?
Yes and no. So I think there needs to be, and there will be, very, very strong demand for those people. But there also needs to be some cross-pollinization between industry as well. So really having, you know, the key streams of vertical specific people that can sit across one or many technology sets, I think is what we're going to see a lot more of. And I mean, you look at a lot of the big four, they already have some of those models in place. Some of them are just a little bit difficult to actually move and react very quickly to the market. And I think if you have some very specific industry skill, yes, that will make you more valuable.
So what's going to be your approach to building a team? Because one of the frustrations for most in the market is the pinching of staff, right, between consulting businesses and the driving up of salaries because it's not sustainable because people aren't hiring juniors. They're hiring seniors and more seniors and trying to pay them the right money to come across. So how do you build a consulting business in an ecosystem where salaries are high and there's super competition for key resources?
I think there's a bit of a blended strategy for me. One is higher on attitude and not necessarily on skill. So I want to know that I have people that are aligned to my values and the company's values. And to me, that's almost worth more than somebody that has 15 years of Salesforce experience. Like if they can't understand how we work and understand and be able to empathize with the client, quite often we don't get the results we want anyways, right? The second part of it is, you know, bringing on some key people who do have that 15 or 12 years of experience on the Salesforce platform who are very technical, driving the interest, I guess, again, more of values than paychecks. I think they're also with COVID, you know, there's more of a shift towards intrinsic motivation opposed to extrinsic motivation. So it's not all about the number that ends up in your bank every day. It's about how do I feel when I go to work and what value am I giving to society? So being very values aligned, I think is a very key part to attracting awesome talent and awesome staff in. And also being able to give back to society a little bit in helping people retrain onto the platform. So, you know, I've taken on a mentee who we've engaged directly into a project. So I've literally, she has very little or no Salesforce experience. I've brought her in a BA capacity to try and give her some capability on the platform. And I'm obviously mentoring her down that path. And I'm looking to grab people in the market who are very skilled on other technology platforms and have a lot of maybe consulting experience or a lot of solutions experience, and teaching the Salesforce skills actually isn't that difficult, especially these days, right? So lining somebody up with a partner or a teammate that can help the conversation around mentoring them and giving them the right set of resources, as long as they have the right attitude and they've, you know, got some really awesome solutioning experience or project experience, that's I think a recipe for success.
Sure. And from some of the conversations we've had offline, giving back is important to you and is part of the business plans and strategy. So why is that so important?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a couple things. One, because of all the disruption that we've seen, you know, there's a lot of people in need, right? So whether that's just somebody needing to find a new job or if it's, you know, working with not-for-profits to try and help them become more impactful, you know, it's vital. And for me, you know, I've been in a number of organizations where giving back hasn't necessarily been a key priority. And it's all about, you know, getting in, being in the grind, getting home and just feeling exhausted all the time. You know, I want to be part of an organization. I want to build something where at the end of the day, I might still be equally as tired, but I'm feeling a bit happier because actually we've helped somebody. We've changed the way that, you know, even if it's just one person or 1%, we've helped change somebody's life. We've helped organizations become more effective. We've helped organizations become more impactful and hopefully also more values driven. and the way that clients engage in the market, it's becoming more and more important to see companies that actually stand up for the rights of the people that don't have the opportunity to stand up for themselves. And it's an opportunity to, again, try and change the world a little bit.
Sure. So finally, before I let you get back to building the business, what's been your favorite part of being a business owner so far?
My strategy days. I've made a big point to take at least one day a month, and I call it a strategy day. It's an opportunity for me to take a very long walk along the beach and think about what are we doing? Is it the right approach? Are we ticking the right boxes? But also just take a step away from the business sometimes and relax and reflect. And I think, you know, when on the times that I've stopped and done that, when I personally feel revitalized, but also being able to look back and go, you know, we've only been a business for a couple months and already we're kicking some really interesting goals. I'm having some really interesting conversations. We're submitting RFIs for some really interesting, you know, clients and solutions and things that we wouldn't have done before, and just being very grateful for the network. So one of the best parts of being a small business owner is actually there's a lot of really cool other small business owners, and the fact that everybody's very, very supportive in that network has been something that I've really enjoyed.
Yeah, nice. Well, I wish you every luck and success for the future, and I'm keen to see how it all unfolds. And yeah, I'm sure we'll see the business growing over the coming months and years. So really excited to see that. And thank you so much for your time. If anyone does want to reach out and ask any questions online, where's the best place to find you?
LinkedIn is always easy. So feel free to reach out on LinkedIn. You can also get hold of us through our website, which is octurious.com. And yeah, those are probably the best channels for me.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. Really enjoyed the chat.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.